Hello and welcome to Dopey, the podcast about drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. I'm Dave.
I'm Chris.
It's like, I don't want to go into that.
Into what?
It's like you put this pressure on me to say that. It's like, and you refuse to say.
What, to bring up what happened?
No, to say, it's that tagline at the beginning of every episode.
Oh, yeah, well, you gotta say it. You gotta introduce it, and you gotta do the same intro.
Why don't you just do it from now on?
Okay.
You'll do it from now on?
Yeah.
Great. So, we have a very, 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 very tragic piece of news, which is that Andrew, from two episodes ago, episode 110, died.
Hippie hobo Andrew.
He died yesterday.
Yeah. It's a somber moment in Dopey history.
It's fucking tragic. It's horrible.
It's fucked up.
Well,
it's like we do this thing and we laugh at it. And Dave and I were talking about this yesterday about how, like, should we be more serious? And, like, that's just not possible. You know, that's just not how we are and how we approach recovery and life in general. But the reality of the situation is that this is going to continually happen.
People are going to keep dying.
And the people that we know through Dopey, not even talking about personal, like, friends and whatnot who have passed away, it's only been a couple now.
Three.
But it's probably even more than that.
Because those
are
about
people who were super active in terms of reaching out, and we found out from their families, you know?
We have no idea who lives or who dies. And the really fucked up thing is that Andrew was doing good. You know what I'm saying? Andrew went to treatment. Yeah. Andrew got a Vivitrol shot. I met with Andrew on Wednesday.
And even when we listened to him, like, he was, like, excited about life in general. He wasn't like, I'm going to use, you know what I mean? There was fight in him.
There was fight in him. I saw him on Wednesday morning, and he was in good spirits.
Smiling, laughing.
We had a ton of laughs. We were. I met him on Union Square, and I took him to a coffee shop, and we had.
Did you take him to coffee shop?
I took him to coffee shop.
Yeah.
And I took him to
Dopey Nation. There's a coffee shop called Coffee Shop.
No, I didn't take him to coffee shop. I thought
that's
I just
like a fancy swanky one.
No, I took him to the Bean.
Oh, I was going to say, you wouldn't take anyone to coffee shop.
No, I like coffee shop.
It's expensive.
Yeah, especially for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was a kid, the waitresses there were super hot.
Yeah, they're still pretty hot.
But this place was pretty good, too.
So, Andrew.
But we went to the Bean, and we sat up front. And, like, I kind of feel guilty. I don't feel guilty, but I feel a little weird because Andrew said to me that he wasn't going to be sober.
He's going to smoke weed. He said on the show, too.
He said he was going to smoke weed, and I was like, and how many times do I have to tell him that I don't think that's a good idea? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't eat once.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I just said, maybe I'm a little jealous. I said to him, sitting outside of the Bean, that you get to smoke weed, but mostly I fear for you because you're going to get a taste of it and it's so easy. It's so much easier to not do anything than say, I'm going to do a little of this, but not that. It's like, it's so easy just to not do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just think it's so easy, or I would say a heroin relapse.
But see, when you're in the throes of it, you see it as the opposite. It's so much easier just to smoke a little pot. That's what it feels like. From his perspective. You know what I mean? Because it's something. You still have some sort of medicine. You know what I'm saying?
Of course. And I've been there. I've been there where I get out of treatment and I'm like, I'm not going to do dope anymore. But I'm going to smoke a little pot. And I remember I've sat with who knows how many counselors. Sitting with the counselor saying, I'm not going to do heroin again, but I'm definitely going to smoke weed.
Like, yeah.
I had Andrew's exact line, which is another reason why Andrew's death.
See, you were so much different than me.
What?
Because even if my intention was to do that, I would just be like, I'm not going to do anything ever again.
I would leave treatment and I would say, I don't want to do dope. I don't want to do pills, but I'm going to smoke weed.
Yeah.
There was a story. Well, let's just stay on this.
Yeah.
Then me and Andrew leave the coffee. I'm late. I'm getting late for work. And I asked Andrew if he wanted to walk downtown with me. And he did. And he had a bike. He was wearing a
did he walk his bike?
Yeah.
Oh.
And he looked good. You know, he looked healthy. he's like 24 years old and full of smiles. And I was, you know, all I ever talked to anybody about, he wanted to be the intern. So I'm talking about how we can make Dopey better. You know what I mean? He's like, well, what did you have in mind? And I was like, well, he listens to other podcasts. He listened to other podcasts. And he was talking about different sponsors that every podcast uses and why can't we use it. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And I was like, this is what I want you to do. I want you to get contact information for sponsors. Get contact information for guests. Think about how we can have more exposure. I gave him fucking 50 cards. You know, and then we're when we walk down 11th Street and we turn right on like 4th Avenue, which is a very like weird street where 4th Avenue and Lafayette are, and there's this woman on the street and she's like, they're not going to test me today. It's like a methadonian just on the street. And I went, Andrew, did you hear that? And he starts laughing. He's like, yeah, it's a methadonian. I was like, he was like, you should start doing more recordings out in the street with people who
use. That was great that one day when you recorded the guy in the morning.
It's always good. And he was like, you should do more of that. We're talking about, and we're talking about Straight Outta Rehab. It was like, I was talking about Dave Marshall with him. You know how sad it was that he had died? You know, like, and we talked about, like, we were laughing at the methadone person.
This is how many, is less than 24 hours before he died.
Less than 24 hours before he died.
It's crazy. You were shook. Are you feeling now?
I feel sad. I feel residually sad. When, so, then he dropped me off at work and he was so excited, you know, to do this. And he he told me he was going to talk to his father because his father is a corporate real estate guy and his father has ideas about marketing or whatever. I was like, great. Kidding me? All the help we can get. And then I worked and I felt like good. I felt like we could offer him something. He was going to help push
Dopey. It's a project. Hobby.
But I just felt good that we could offer it to him. And I felt good to have, you know, I want people on the squad. You know, and then I went home and I guess I didn't think about it. And then the next day I went to work and I'm going home and I get on the train and I look in my email and it's his father who says, should I read it? His father emails me. I never met his father. Emails us and he says, what does he say? He says, David, I know you met with Andrew yesterday. I wanted to tell you that he passed away from an overdose this morning. I know he liked you and hoped to do something with you, but the demons won. And I was on the Long Island Railroad and my stomach fell out. And,
what did you write back to him? I didn't see the response.
I wrote, it's not the greatest email I've ever written. I wrote, Dear Mr. Cohen, I'm so sorry to hear that. I thought he had gotten the Vivitrol shot. I really liked Andrew, too. I'm so very sorry this happened, to hear this news. If there's anything I can do, please let me know. All my best. What should I have written?
No, that's great.
I didn't want to write, he was a wonderful kid and blah. He wrote me like 2 hours after his son is fucking dead. You know, I didn't know what else to write. But I do feel insecure that that wasn't the right thing to write.
I think in these situations, the way I always look at it is he's going to have an outpouring. First of all, who knows if he wants it. But either way, he's going to have an outpouring of people talking to him, friends and family. And I think what's always good is 6 months, a year down the road, drop him a two-sentence email. Because I feel like so many people die these deaths, you know, and to know that they're remembered in some capacity. I'm just assuming, you know what I mean? I don't have a child and, like, you know, someone who's passed away that's dear to me, but to know that they're remembered a year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, that's comforting on a different level. Because what's going to happen is a million people say something and then you're alone with it, you know, in a couple of weeks.
You look at Dave Marshall's death.
That's, I mean, I sent him a handwritten letter 6 months after he died. I don't even know if he got it or anything. You know, I sent it to an old P.O. box I had of his. But I still, and that's how I process it too, is I don't get super upset. And I wasn't close to Andrew. I just met him that one time. But for people I've known that have passed away, it's like, it's weird for me 2 years later when something cool has happened in my life, randomly I'll remember them and be like, nothing's cool is happening in their life anymore. Do you know what I mean? I remember usually in tandem with like a positive event, a milestone of some sort of like a development in my life. Do you know what I'm saying? A girlfriend, an apartment, a job, a career prospect, something like that happens, and that's a good thing. Then I think of people I knew who passed away because of this disease. That's when I get sad.
Yeah. It was funny. I was walking through the Union Square Farmers Market, and he's like, where are you? And I said, I'm in the Union Square Farmers Market. I'm looking for huckleberries.
Did you really say that? Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. And he laughed. And, like, it's like his father, right, to write his demons want.
Yeah.
You know, his father has probably been around this with him.
For years.
For years. And Andrew was worried
Andrew was selectively homeless, you know.
Not to mention, I mean, like, he was for worried years. About. He was worried that we called him a hippie. Instead of a hobo.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, he's, you know, it just goes to show.
Yeah.
You know, and I really see it as like, it's suspended adolescence. It's like addiction in our population of a young man whose life is provided for them, who worries about being called a hippie or a hobo, you know, like, it's like we just skate by in this world.
Yeah.
And like, and our parents really suffer. Totally. You know what I mean? And his father probably really suffered. When I told my dad, you should have seen the look on his face because I know what he's thinking.
He's into you.
Yeah, that could have been me.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I'm sad Andrew died. You know, and I also, you know, it needs to be said, obviously, what we said last night was just the truth. It's like as much as like I would love to have like the most positive fucking show about being grateful for sobriety.
Yeah.
Like that's not a show that you and I could do.
I think that we do that. I think it's more the cautionary tale of drug use. We're not going to do that.
No, but we fucking. It's like this movie. There was this movie, Red Dawn. You ever see Red Dawn?
I've heard of it.
They made a remake of it recently, but in the movie, Russia and Cuba invade the heartland of America.
Okay.
And six high school students flee to the wilderness to fight the communists, okay? They stock up on all sorts of weapons and, you know, grenades and food and cans of beans and fucking, you know.
It's like toy soldiers.
I never saw that. Guns. What is that?
We'll just keep going.
Hey, what is it?
It's like these people go take over high school, like these like military, paramilitary sort of mercenary bad guys, and like the students like get the guns and fight back.
Yeah, I guess it's like that.
Yeah.
But Red Dawn in the 80s...
I actually have a fucking great toy soldier story, but keep going.
It was a classic Cold War story. It was with Charlie Sheen and...
was he a kid?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Patrick Swayze Jennifer Grey. And it was like this like...
It's great.
But it was like 1985.
Okay, what does this have to do?
Okay, so they're fighting the communists and they're like running off in the field and fucking and enjoying their life and this and that. And then all of a sudden on one raid, like three of them die.
Yeah.
And it's like we sit around and we laugh... And we put up fucking Instagram memes of, like, dumb fucking funny shit. And we're laughing and laughing, and it's so funny. And then Andrew's dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, obviously, everyone's going to fucking die of this thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like, chances are, if you're I mean, a lot of people live to be old, but with this fentanyl and whatever.
The fentanyl, yes.
Let me ask you this, because a friend of mine asked me about this, with fentanyl. Like, do they sell fentanyl in the street as fentanyl?
No.
Like maybe. Let me get that fent. I've
heard a lot of people doing dope, and fentanyl detects differently in your analysis.
So you know afterwards.
But I'm saying afterwards, and they're not even doing any dope. It's just straight fentanyl.
Fentanyl. So this is what I'm asking you. If fentanyl is 30 times stronger than dope,
yeah.
Is that what it is?
I don't know. I think it's like 100. And then there's carfentanil, which is even stronger.
So why wouldn't they just brand the bags fent? Like, wasn't everybody wanting something that's 100 times stronger than dope?
Yeah, I don't get it either.
If I was using...
Yeah, if you had a monster habit, you'd want the fentanyl. I think the problem with it is it's so strong, and they order it pure from these, like shitty labs. I don't know if they're shitty, but from labs in, like, China and stuff like that. And it's just really hard...
Shitty Chinese labs?
It's just really hard to cut it right. Do you know what I mean? Because the overdose, if you get pure fentanyl, is like it's less than a match head. You know, it's like grains of sand. You know, it's like really, really tiny. So picture you have to chop that up evenly with cut. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty hard to do it. So one bag could be wicked strong and one couldn't, you know?
One bag could be wicked strong.
Wicked strong. Let me tell you my Toy Soldiers story real quick before we go. Are we switching paces here? Or?
I'm just wondering, Dopey Nation, whoever's using out there, are there any fentanyl
Yeah, have you ever heard of anybody actually stamps? On the street selling fentanyl?
I got your fent.
Yeah.
This fent is fire.
Well, I mean, for me, fentanyl was Duragesic, like when I used. It wasn't like in dope, you know?
It was the patch.
It was the patches, and you took the gel out and you mixed it up and you fired the gel up, you know?
That's a great word. You love those words.
Duragesic?
You like don't have good words. You have these fucking, these ridiculous words.
Duragesic is just the brand name for a medicine.
But like, what's that word, encephalate? Like, you like words like
encephalate. What was the word I couldn't say? Extrapolate?
You couldn't say...
Reprobate.
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 You couldn't say reprobate. You couldn't say combative.
All right, let me tell you my story.
But encephalate and Duragesic is a brand?
Duragesic, yeah. This is the fentanyl patches. Let me just tell you...
But admit it, your vocabulary is weird.
The vocabulary sucks.
What? It's
I know. Weird. I just learned a few things to try to dazzle some people.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
My friend, I have this one friend who listens to Dopey, and
he hates my shit.
He just randomly, you know, he thinks you're great. He finds you to be like, thinks you're great, he thinks you're funny, he thinks you're great on the show, but he thinks you're just such an idiot.
Yeah.
And like, he sends me like combative, he's like, Chris is such a retard. He sends me stuff like that all the time.
All right, Toy Soldiers, real quickly. You're going to hate this story, all right? So there used to be this service called Cosmo.com that was in Washington, D.C., Boston, New York City, and Chicago, I believe. And the deal was, this isn't like 2002, 2003 or something, 2001, 2002, is you could order anything online and have it delivered, most things online and have it delivered to you in under an hour. You could literally order like
on Cosmo?
On Cosmo.com. You could order like a bottle.
C-O-S-M-O?
It was K-O-Z-M-O.com.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, and it went out of business. And you could rent movies on Cosmo.com.
Okay.
And so, and there was drop-off boxes all over. So you'd rent the movie, they'd deliver it to your door, and then when you were done watching it, there was drop-off boxes all over the city and when they delivered, like Ben and Jerry's and Domino's and stuff like that. So me and my brother, I visited him in college, and we rented this movie called Toy Soldiers, the one that I referenced earlier. But they delivered
just
to us.
Just referenced.
But they delivered the wrong Toy Soldiers, right? It was this shitty budget. Like, honestly, they must have made the movie on like $30,000. It was the shittiest budget movie. They would try to do like concurrent, they would try to film like concurrent scenes, right? And like one would be sunset and one would be dark out. Or I'm sorry, one would be sunset and one would be dark out. Do you know what I mean? Like, they didn't have enough film to like film concurrent scenes. Are you following what I'm saying?
Loosely.
So just, anyways, all you gotta know is it's the shittiest fucking movie ever. But Tim Robbins was in it, and he was like 17, and he had like a 3-minute part in it, right? Really small. And so I'm down. We watched the movie twice. It was so bad.
Why did you watch it twice?
Because we would laugh at it because it was so funny. Shitty. It was funny how bad it was. And so I was in the Caribbean and I was at a hotel pool, and Tim Robbins was there. And Tim Robbins goes up to the bar, and I'm with my brother. And I go, and Tim Robbins is by himself. The person at the bar is not there. And I go up into the bar next to him, and he looks over at me, and I look at him, and I look away, and I look back at him, and I go, "Excuse me," I go, "Weren't you in Toy Soldiers?" And he literally just like stares at me for a little bit, and like kind of like looks confused, and then he starts laughing, and he goes, "That's the first movie he's like I was ever in." He's like, "Nobody's ever mentioned that to me."
That's
before.
Funny.
Yeah.
And then how old were you?
I was in high school because my brother was in college when we watched it. And it was short, I must have been 17, 16, something. I don't know.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And that was the first thing that popped in your head.
What?
Not like Shawshank Redemption or The Player.
I was sitting with my brother and I was like, I should go ask him about Toy Soldiers.
So you planned it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
Sarandon, and Susan Sarandon was there.
She was with him.
She has really big boobs.
I think they're not together anymore.
No, I don't think so.
Did you see Rocky Horror Picture Show?
No. I mean, yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of it.
She's in that. Let's call this woman.
Okay.
But let me hit that. Anyway, I want to just also say, like, Dopey Nation, like, be careful. You know what I mean? Like, be in touch and be careful and...
You know. And go on the get on the Vivitrol, have the Narcan. I know you don't like the replacement therapies, but I mean, if consider that.
Do whatever you can do. I mean, you know, step one, stop using. You know what I mean? That would be great. Get clean. It'd be awesome. If you can't get clean, do whatever you can do to not die. Especially if you're like big in the Dopey Nation community.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to hear about anybody else dying. It makes me sad.
Maybe you should start a podcast.
Called Don't Die.
Don't Die.
Yeah, I've been thinking about starting a podcast called Don't Die. No, I'm just saying, like, I like to have fun, and I don't want to get into the whole replacement therapy, whatever.
We will again later.
I want, if that makes somebody's life better forever, fucking great.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't see it that way.
That's fine.
You know, I see, like, incredible trouble coming out of the corners of your eyes.
Yeah.
I just want our listeners to... I want everybody to be as good as they can. And I want to also say, it's like, as you know, we ran into one of Chris's friends at my job randomly. He was just
an hour ago, yeah.
And how much time does he have?
He's got... I mean, he didn't relapse. I went to rehab with him, with you. So yeah. What's that, like 6-7 years?
So he had 6 or 7 years ago, and he's introducing us to two...
New
sober
guys.
Friends of his.
And he's still, like, super involved in AA.
Oh, those were new guys?
I think so, yeah. That one guy definitely seemed new.
And,
maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. But then he asked us how much time we had. And I was like, and I felt kind of stupid. I was like, 2.5 years. And Chris is like, almost 4 years.
Yeah.
Because, like, that guy, Andrew, has 7 years. And we couldn't put that time together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But like, Andrew smoked salvia at Mountain Zion. Do you know that? It'll tarnish his record a little bit for you.
That's not the point. My point is, like, we do this podcast on being clean and talking about our past and recovery. But the fact was, like, I wasn't always clean. You know, I was way more... I feel like I've always been clean now.
No.
You know, I feel like that, though.
Yeah.
You know, but... It's not as hard as it seems to get to the other side.
In the beginning, it's fucking seems impossible.
Right.
You're asking to part ways with the only thing that's ever offered any relief, or I was at least, you know? It was literally the one thing in my life I found. I was like, God, like, I fucking love this. Like, it is great. Like, it makes life so much better. It was like the only thing, you know what I mean? And then my fucking whole identity was tied up in it.
Was it the only thing?
Yeah, my identity was so tied up in it too, where it was like, you know, before I became like a real bad junkie, it was like, oh, like I was a guy who like drank a lot and was fun to drink with, and I smoked a lot of weed, and I was crazy and zany, and people didn't know what I was going to do, and people actually enjoyed like using with me. Even when I was not partying, even when I was like drinking alcoholically, they still liked to drink with me. And then, so it was like saying goodbye to my identity. It was just so many, on so many levels, you know?
For me, it was like, it was this thing that gave me utter relief.
Yeah.
And then like wanting to feel that way all the time. Like it wasn't my, like it was not, like there's somebody in the Dopey Nation who wrote me and was asking me to talk about like New York City stories from when I was a kid and whatever. Yeah. When I was a kid, like, I was a good fucking kid.
Yeah, you walked around.
Yeah, I just walked around. I hung out with my friends.
You
I threw
shit off the roof.
Yeah. When I was older, I found the relief of getting out of my head through drugs, through weed, and then eventually heroin and pills. And once I had it, it was like, why would I do anything else? You know, it played into all of my insecurities and all of my fear and all that comfort. And also to be defiant through chemistry was like, what an easy way to be defiant.
Yeah.
You know, why do I have to worry about anything besides feeling like that? But getting out of it, it actually, I mean, I think it was a miracle that I got out of it the way I got out of it because it just sort of stopped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just, it was, my mother died. My daughter was born. It was big shakeups.
Yeah.
Like, and I had to stop.
Yeah.
You know? But then I didn't want to give up weed.
Yeah.
And then I did. And I just think, like, understandably what you're saying in terms of our listeners, how hard it would be to say, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as easy as that. But I'm saying on the flip side, it's not as easy as it is. It's way easier than they think it is.
Oh,
it feels like shit, but it's so much easier than you than they think it is.
It's like a prolonged fucking, it's almost like withdrawing from dope. It's like the fear of it when it starts coming on is worse than when it actually is in reality.
The weirdest thing about it for me is it's totally cigarettes. Because I was so scared to stop smoking.
Yeah.
I was fucking, I in my mind, I would be in withdrawal if I stopped smoking cigarettes. That's all I could think.
Yeah.
That if I stopped smoking cigarettes, I'd get sick.
Yeah.
Like withdrawal.
Yeah.
And then like, and I was like, I can't do it. I smoke. I'm a smoker. I can't do it. I smoke. And then I stopped smoking. I was like, I guess I don't have to smoke.
Yeah. You know?
Whatever. It was just.
Should I read this email before we call her or no?
Whatever you want to do.
We got to get through some of these. I'm going to read this email real quickly, and then we have two callers on this episode. So this is from Mandy. She's an ex-pharmacist. Hi, I wanted to reach out and say hey and thanks for your podcast. I am in recovery for almost 2.5 years after many attempts to get sober since 2001. I was a pharmacist with a pretty bad drug and alcohol addiction. I was in an abusive relationship until 2001 with my high school sweetheart, who ended up being a monster. I was 25 at the time and had stayed high in opiates and other stuff consistently for about 3 years, starting from the time I got my pharmacist license. I'm talking 24 hours a day. I had an endless supply of opiates. I never had to go into withdrawal, and I would go home and drink a fifth or more of vodka or whatever was around. I was taking 10 to 15 pills at a time and got up to about 90 pills a day. I would eat Norco 10 and Vicoprofen by the handfuls. My ankles and legs were so swollen from all the fluid that I was retaining, I could push on my ankle and my fingerprint would stay indented in my leg. It was so disgusting. And I'm not a big person at all, but my legs looked like sausages. I was puking blood a lot. One day I chugged a bottle of rum before getting into my car and driving to work. I woke up in the ER many hours later, hooked up to IVs, and they gave me Narcan. The Narcan was so awful. I instantly pissed myself and then proceeded to shit myself. Some tiny little poop pebbles, since as you know, you don't poop with opiates, so they had been baking in my guts for a while. Evidently, my blood alcohol had been over 0.4 plus all the pills. If I hadn't driven to work that day, I might not have been here to tell you about it. Fast forward over the next 15 years, I've been in multiple monitoring programs for impaired pharmacists and gone to several detox and rehabs. I managed to fly under the radar and keep my RPH license intact, quitting a few jobs before getting found out or fired until June 3rd, 2015, when I got fired for stealing drugs from my job. I went to a rehab later that day. Besides being a druggy thief, I was a really great employee and had even received awards at work, so it was a shock to everyone around me. So I've been sober since that day and attend 12-step meetings, work with a sponsor, and all that jazz. A couple months into recovery, I was in yet another pharmacist monitoring program and having to be at their beck and call when they wanted a P-test, having to get a card signed at meetings, etc., and I felt resentful towards the monitoring program. I was like, I want to be sober because I want to be sober, not because I have to in order to keep my license for a career I'm miserable in anyways. I decided to let my pharmacist license expire and told the Board of Pharmacy my wish is to not be a pharmacist anymore. I made the decision to become a hairdresser, something I've always wanted to do. I've always been an artsy and creative person, and pharmacy was stifling, but I was young when I made that career choice and just wanted to make a lot of money. I always said if I could, I would go to school for hair. So now was the time. We had to sell our house, and I got a job at a local salon working as a receptionist. I finished school in February, and I'm working as a stylist at the salon. I love what I do, and I even won a scholarship to attend a Sassoon Academy,
nice,
being one of only 10 picked nationally for the award. I know this email is already long. When I listen to Dopey, I always think I have funny stories, but then I realize, oh no, that's just really sad. I did find it funny to hear one of you talk about putting heroin in an eyedropper bottle. I used to do this with liquid Dilaudid. I loved it because I could just pop a few mils in my mouth whenever I was. I have the usual stories about being so messed up and trying to use the ottoman as a toilet or purposely turning my head towards my then boyfriend when I had to puke and vomiting all over him during a Pink Floyd laser light show so as to avoid puking on myself or a stranger. Good times. Anyways, thanks for bringing a laugh and hope to the subject of addiction. My family doesn't think it's particularly funny, so it's nice to find that humor with fellow junkies. Keep up the dopey, Mandy.
Nice.
It's great. Thanks, Mandy.
Love that, Mandy. That was the perfect email.
Yeah.
Now we're going to call this woman Callie. I don't remember anything about her. I just know that she has a blog. and she wants to interview us for her blog.
Okay.
Okay?
What's her name?
Callie.
Hello?
Hey, Callie.
Hey.
Is it Callie?
How are you? Yes, it's Callie.
This is Dave, and Chris is here with me.
Hey, Callie.
Oh, my gosh. Are we recording Dopey right now?
We're totally recording Dopey. We're in a very swanky hotel on the Lower East Side.
Really? Yeah. That's so exciting.
It is incredible. Where are you?
I'm in Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm putting in a headset.
You have a Minnesotan accent, though.
I'm in what?
You sound like you're from Minnesota with your accent.
People say I have an accent, but I'm just nowhere special. I just talk funny, perhaps. I grew up in Utah, so maybe people there talk very animated.
Callie, I used to live on Camelback Golf Course, Camelback Mountain Golf Course or something. Camelback Inn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Camelback Inn,
yeah,
Golf Course.
Arizona is all golf courses. That's all we have out here.
Yeah, off of Tatum in Scottsdale, Tatum Boulevard.
Yeah, real familiar with that area.
Yeah.
That's great, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure she's really...
Some vape knocks for that?
You into that, Callie?
Am I into that he used to live out here?
Yeah, that he used to live at the Camelback Golf Course or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, tell us about your blog.
It's not my blog. It's my company's blog. It's Work It Health.
Work It Health.
Yes, yes. We are an online addiction platform. So people who don't want to go away to treatment or people who want to get help getting sober at home, they log in online, they do lessons, they talk to a coach or a counselor, and I'm the community lead. It was started by two gals in long-term recovery. I used to live in the Bay Area. That's where I got sober. I got sober in Oakland. And, yeah, it was started by two of my friends out there that have tech backgrounds, and they hired me on to do all the blog and all the social media and that stuff.
Right on. And you put us into your blog. We were the podcast you shouldn't listen to if you're in recovery.
So what happened is I was trying to look for, as you guys probably know, out there in the recovery world, there's like so much stuff about after you get into recovery, right? And like self-care tips and wellness tips,
right.
Stuff. But it's so hard to find stuff that really speaks to, because you don't begin in that recovery world. Like when you're thinking about getting sober, you don't say the word recovery. Like you're just thinking about putting down drugs, and you're thinking about maybe buying Suboxone on the street, or you're thinking about how do I detox at home. You know, you're not really in this recovery world space.
It's like a fantasy, the idea of recovery. It's like a vacation in your head.
Exactly. So that's what I was really looking for. And then I found Dopey, and I was like, oh, wow, this is real, you know. This really talks about what it was like a lot. This is... But I had only listened to the first few podcasts, in my defense, when I wrote that. And I think you guys do. You're not afraid, like, if people are missing the old life or if people are craving some of that realness, right, from, you know, drug addicts, like, they don't mess around, I guess. They keep it real, you know, and if they're craving some of that, I think Dopey's a really good podcast to listen to. So that's what I meant in my defense. I didn't mean like listen to this if you want to use. I just meant like if you're missing your old lifestyle, this podcast speaks to the truth and the insanity of that lifestyle better than some of the other stuff that's out there that's going to take you to more of a wellness place.
Totally. And I think one of the things to mention, which is sort of what you were getting at, is a lot of the shows out there, they sort of speak that recovery language for people who have already been indoctrinated in that world. And we don't necessarily do that. And also a lot of them are pretty sort of formulaic in the sense that they bring somebody on the show, they share their experience, strength, and hope, and it's an hour to an hour and a half. And then the next week it's the same thing. We bring people on, but we also sort of share aspects of our lives, and there's a timeline that's unfolded over years, and hopefully it continues to unfold.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's so important for people to see, is just like, you guys talk about real stuff that's going on for you as well, you know? And I also think it's important to talk about what it was like. I think people are worried because it's a little bit triggering, you know, to people in early recovery. But I was trying to explain it to my boyfriend, who's a normie, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like, the power in sharing war stories, or in sharing those crazy things that we did. And there really is this tribal bonding feeling when you're sharing that stuff, that's really hard to describe to people who haven't been there, because we did the craziest things and we went so low, you know, and it's really hard to live with that by yourself. And there's a lot of power in talking about it, even if there is some risk involved in being triggered or whatnot.
Right. Well, we did it. We also did it for a reason. We did it like to almost, I know that I did. Well, let's get to the interview. Are you going to interview us?
Yes,
I'm excited for the interview.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to talk this entire time. I wanted to just explain myself, my little blurb there. But so, yeah, I guess, are you guys concerned about people being triggered by the podcast at all? Because I think if there is a negative aspect to the war stories part of Dopey, or there is some, it's debatable, right, in the recovery community, it's because of that, because of the possibility of these negative stories being triggered. So what do you guys think about that?
I think, first of all, I thought there was going to be so much more of a negative outpouring when we started it. I thought that we were going to get a huge backlash, like a lot of negative reviews and sort of hate mail and stuff. We haven't really gotten any of that.
We've gotten a little bit.
We've gotten a little bit, but the closest thing to what you're talking about, where I've been like, what are we doing? Should we be doing this? Is we've gotten like a couple emails from maybe people in their like late adolescence that are just sort of telling us all the different sort of drugs they did, and it would be not even like a drug log. It'd just be like, oh, I took like LSD with my friends this night, and we did this and we did that, and it wasn't even really a story. There was no perspective. It's almost like they were just like sort of not confessing, but just sharing with us like, oh, I did all these drugs, and like, but in those cases, I think that the response that Dave and I have could be critical. It could be, you know, crucial. And that's one of the...
What do you mean?
It means that, like, if we respond to them and say, hey, yeah, it's, like, super fun, but if, like, you ever notice you're taking these things and you're experiencing, like, negative consequences and still doing them despite that, do you know what I mean? Then it's, like, we have a chance to reach somebody at an age who isn't going to listen to some other sort of recovery-centric show who could have a problem. Maybe they don't, but...
I think our trick... I agree with what you're saying, but there's a trick to it. Because when we started doing the show, we were like, we didn't want to make a recovery show. I thought it was a good idea that everybody loves crazy drug stories, and I thought we should have a show about crazy drug stories.
Yeah.
And as soon as we started the show, it needed to be said that we weren't on drugs.
Yeah.
That needed to be said. And then it also needed to be said that not only are we not on drugs, but we're horrible addicts who had to get sober.
Yeah.
You know, that has to be built into the story. And once that's out there, if you're in recovery and you're telling a horrible story and you're not going to go get high afterwards, you kind of really hammer the fact that that part of my life is over.
Yeah.
You know, that was funny. That was crazy. That was sad. That was horrible.
Yeah.
But that's over now.
Yeah.
You know, we build that into the episodes, and I think as we went along, in the beginning, we didn't plan on it being a recovery show.
Yeah.
But as we went along, the recovery kind of had to pop out of the snake's mouth, because like it needed to in order for me and Chris to like sleep at
to
night.
Sleep at night. And Callie, like I work in the addiction treatment field, and with the sort of milieu of clients you have, like sometimes it starts to get a little bit more war story-y. And we kind of steer them away from that. But I do think there can be extreme value in it if you're doing it to connect with another human being. And then you say, holy shit, this guy's got the same thing I got. There's no shame behind it. And he seems happy now, or she seems happy now. How did you do it? How did you stop? So the war stories can be a conduit to get to that place. But when it's a bunch of people active or in early recovery and they're just saying triggering shit, there is a chance that they'll go out and use because of it. So that's a super valid question you're asking.
Yeah. I definitely think there's a difference in the intention behind it. Sometimes people try and tell stuff to, like, one-up the people, you know, and sometimes people tell it just because it's getting it out there and avoiding shame and being like, addiction is really crazy. It's really fucked up and we overcame it. And I feel like dopey always comes from the second part. It's not like you guys are like, look at how hardcore we were. It's like, we're trying, you know, addiction's really fucked up and we're talking about it to get over the shame. So
now, I think the best dopey stories aren't the most hardcore. They're the most pathetic. You know,
right?
It's like, those are the best ones.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a list of questions. Let me pull it up here. So you guys are friends, right? And you're working together on a podcast as well.
We were friends until Chris got into this new relationship. Now we just work on a podcast.
So do you think that that has made you better friends? Has it strained your relationship? Because it's kind of like a business partnership, right? Or it's kind of like a working relationship.
It's like the worst business in the history of the universe.
So, Callie, I lived in New York City for almost 2 years. And, you know, Dave was 3 train stops away, basically. And I saw him
once,
3 times in a year,
right.
2 years.
But yeah, it was your relapse year.
Yeah, but even before I relapsed, it was a year before I didn't see you at all.
No.
And now I don't live in New York City, and I see and talk to you all the time.
Yeah, but Chris and I are both very much what's the word? It's like we both operate from a place of like. There's a word I'm missing.
We're neurotic?
No, well, we're neurotic, but that's not it. It's like we have a reason. Like, if there's a reason for us, like, if, like, one of us is down and out or something, or, like, back when Chris was in Brooklyn, he started to look for drugs. So I would hear from him a lot then. Or, like, if
part of the relationship. I went through a shitty relationship thing, and Dave kind of helped me through it.
If there's a reason, or I was going through something, or I had to get through something, or I had just started to get clean again, and I started to talk to Chris. And that was before we did the podcast. That's really what happened.
Yeah.
I got clean again, you know, a few months before we started Dopey, and Chris had been clean for about a year.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I needed to talk to somebody who had done it.
Yeah.
And we started from there. And then, I mean, the only reason that we still talk as much as we talk is because we've created this beautiful thing together.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that we would be less good friends. We just wouldn't have to talk.
Yeah, I talk to him every day.
No, you don't.
We communicate every day.
You don't talk to me every day. You text.
You want me to talk to you more?
No, it's talking to him is like torture. He asks me questions like that he thinks I should think he's interested. He's like, so what are you doing? He asks me weird questions that he doesn't want to know the answer to. And I'm like, dude, you don't care. It's horrible. But we're friends. Yes, we're friends.
Okay. If you guys could change, you guys are both big 12-steppers, right? If you could change one thing about current 12-step culture, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tough question.
I would change, like, in meetings. Like, they just say weird shit that isn't helpful in meetings. they say, you know, the only thing you can do is not take that next drink or drug. The only thing you have to do is come back tomorrow. You know, take what you want and leave the rest. It's like, I mean, I had all that stuff at meetings, and I got lucky that, like, I caught on to I needed to get clean when I got clean. You know, and I got lucky. Now I'm in this crazy, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous study. And, like, it's very much this guy who runs the study. All he talks about is, like, the only solution to this problem is actually doing the step work. Going to meetings isn't going to do it. And doing the step work properly so that you attain some sort of spiritual fitness, like the dudes in the Oxford group. Because the Oxford group did it to be spiritually fit, and they just found that addiction and alcoholism fell away as a byproduct, right? Right, Chris? Isn't that the thing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Oxford group is the first 6 steps. And to answer your question, I would say actually that if somebody's choosing the 12-step path to actually, and I think this might be the opposite of what Dave was saying, to more closely mirror what the original founding members entailed, which was the 12 steps and the meetings.
That's exactly what I just said.
That's just what he said.
I thought you were saying that you were going to say not, and you were saying to get away from that.
No, yeah. I was saying, I'm saying do the steps.
Yeah, do the, so this. The, I think that ultimately, and
how
again,
could you think I was saying the opposite of that?
I don't know. I didn't know. I thought you were following it up with something else.
I would have followed it up.
I would say to do that, to get more closely, to more closely align with what was originally envisioned, you know, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing step work. And again, that's if you're choosing to do the 12 steps. I mean, they weren't designed as a self-help group. And like, that's sort of what it's became over time. And yeah, it's great that there's a component of that, and that's the fellowship. But, you know, it's three different things, you know. It's trust God, clean house, help others, you know. And the cleaning the house, like, you do that through the step work, you know, and helping others, that's through step work. And trusting God, that's connecting with something greater than you. And I think that people hurl mud at the 12 steps who have difficulty with the higher power piece. And if they do, then go somewhere else. Then, you know, don't do it then, you know. It's like, give it a try, and if it's not for you, then try something else. It isn't supposed to be this all-encompassing thing, you know what I mean? It's like, this is the program of action, and try it. I, like, wholeheartedly think that everybody should really give it a real try, but if you're not willing to do that, then try something else.
Right. Yeah, I think that's so important that there are other options out there, you know, there are other pathways.
Yeah.
So let's see here. Oh, so in our program, in the Work at Health program and in AA, I mean, in all different pathways, the 30-day mark is so hard to make, right? You know, people come in and out and get the 30-day chips all the time. I know when I was trying to get sober, it was always so hard to get those 30 days. What advice do you guys have for the people trying to make it to the 30 days? I guess this is kind of one of the big things that you guys are always talking about with people on Dopey that are struggling, but do you have any specific advice or specific key important things?
Well, I can speak personally. For me, when I relapsed and it was really like towards the end and my addiction was super progressed, I more or less had to be under lock and key, you know, and it was
go
like,
away.
There was like a huge value to treatment, not for like the psychoeducation or for even the group work. It was just for like being removed from society for a period, because it was so fucking hard for me to just put it down, you know, when I was in the environment that I was using in. And I recognize that that's not a possibility. That's just, it's not feasible for most people, you know, financially or because of their work or otherwise. So in that case, then, you know, it's a rigorous action, doing something every single day, for yourself, the self-care activities, whatever that looks like, if that's yoga, exercise, you know, meeting with other people, like, you know, having a positive peer group, like, but something every single day, you know, for 30 days, because it's like, it's kind of crazy to think that people are just going to kind of put it down and just stop. That's the big, like, that's the crazy, that's the confusing part about this, is like there's this element of choice where it's like, why don't you just stop? Why don't you just stop? And it's like you're asking to basically, you're competing with, like, you know, your neurons have been firing a certain way for so fucking long that in order to kind of redirect them and create new healthy pathways in your brain, like, it requires action, you know. It's not just going in and seeing a therapist for an hour once a week. Like, that's a drop in the bucket.
It's also antithetical to the process. It's like, to do that, it's like, when I finally got clean, it was the first time I got clean without going away.
Yeah,
like, I remember I like, and I was just taking pills. I was like taking, you know, benzos and some.
You weren't balls to the wall.
I wasn't balls to the wall. Yeah. In terms of opiates, the way I had been earlier, but I was smoking weed every day. I was taking benzos 4 or 5 times a week. I was taking opiates 3 or 4 times a week, yeah. But I was stoned constantly, mm-hmm. And I had to get clean. And I knew that I couldn't really go away. You know, it wasn't a time that I could go away.
Yeah.
And I was crazed, like, because basically what had happened was that my family had found out that I was using, and my child visitation was taken away from me.
Yeah.
And it fucked up my head. And I went to AA at 7:30 in the morning, And, like, I was like, I'm just going to do this. And, yeah. and it was a meeting that luckily met 7 days a week at 7:30 in the morning. So I would go there at 7:30 in the morning. I would call you. That was when our friendship all the time, had really kicked in, because I would just start calling people.
And that's the beauty of AA, is that you get all these people's phone numbers who understand, first of all, what you're going through and the cravings, you know, to use substances to feel better. And also, you just keep telling the same fucking story. You call one guy, you tell him what's bothering you, and then he's like, you gotta go. And then you call somebody else and you just say the same story over and over. You just keep saying it until you're fucking tired at the end of the day.
And like, I would do that. I would be on the phone as much as I could be. I would take suggestions. I was doing 100 push-ups every day, and like I was like, remember I had a pull-up bar? I was like crazy.
Whoa. Yeah.
And I was smoking a ton of cigarettes, and I was writing on the steps. I like got a sponsor immediately.
Yeah.
And I started writing on the steps. And for me, it's like when my brain is at rest, I'm in big trouble in the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's like I would just keep my brain in motion. If I'm playing a song, if I'm watching a movie, if I'm on the phone, I would go to as many meetings as I could. I would go out to, I would, like, set up dinner dates with people. I would just like see people and be busy.
Yeah.
You know, right. And then you get to 30 days and you're like, I don't want to lose it. Like, I didn't want to give it up. It was so precious to earn it. I didn't want to give it up.
Yeah, for sure.
But on the other hand, when I would go away to a thing, because my first reaction was the same thing you said, which is go away where you're under lock and key. But when I would get out of there, I would be like, I could use one more time because I've been under lock and key.
That's
what would happen to me every time.
The same vigor. Well, that's the whole thing, is that recovery starts after treatment. You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Okay, I'm gonna just ask a couple more. This is a big one I wonder about. You guys just use your first names, right? And you have your dashes over your eyes and pictures. Have you ever talked about this before? Are you guys purposely staying anonymous?
Yeah.
Dave's got a family, and I'm in a grad school, and I don't honestly know how Dopey would reflect on my future career. I think I'd like to get licensed before there's any sort of unveiling.
I think
it's not a 12-step thing. It's a
it's
Dopey thing.
When we started doing it, I didn't know what was going to happen.
No.
You know, I didn't know what the response would be, and I didn't want anyone to Google my name, especially like my kid or their friends, and have it come up like that, you know, that I had seizures or I threw my burning couch out the window or I overdosed or any of it. Like, I don't want that to be associated with my first and last name.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I do believe that Dopey should be the Regis and Kathy Lee for dope fiends. And once Chris gets his licensure, I wouldn't be against like making an income with Dopey and not being anonymous.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys should have a big coming out party. I mean, not in that way, but unveiling the identities, you know?
Yeah.
And then who's been your favorite Dopey guest of all time? Do you guys have specific favorites?
Oh, man, there's been
a lot.
I
have a favorite.
Who's your favorite?
Todd.
Oh, Todd, for sure.
Todd. And Todd is just like, for me, it's like Todd is like the most bittersweet, because I used to get high with Todd. Like I got high with Todd more than I got high with anybody, and Todd's not clean.
Yeah,
you know, and I don't hang out with him anymore. So when I get him on Dopey, I feel this real feeling. I love Todd. I love how he tells a story. He's so funny.
He's easy to talk to.
He's very sad.
He gets the gist, you know. Yeah.
He knows what this is about because he's such a storyteller.
Too. Yeah. In terms of people who I guess are a little bit more popular, I mean, Noah Levine was good. Brandon Novak was good. Bob Forrest has been good.
Brandon Novak was great.
But some of my favorites, again, is it's just addicts just like us. You know what I mean? It's not people who necessarily have, you know, made a career in the field or something.
My dad's always good.
Your dad's good.
Oh,
and Callie. Callie is great, dude.
You're such a kiss ass. Callie, who's your favorite Dopey guest so far? How much have you listened to?
I've listened to to a fair amount now. I haven't listened to all of it, you know.
I don't blame you.
I think, yeah, you can blame me. I mean, I have tried to listen to a lot. I think I really like Brian. Is he the guy who, who's the guy who hit his head?
Hot Wheels.
Oh, Brian. Yeah, Hot Wheels.
No, I love Hot Wheels. Yeah. I love Hot Wheels, and I've talked to him on Reddit. What's up, Hot Wheels? Holler. The guy who fell and hit his head, or not, who got, like, attacked in New York, and he talked about Al-Anon.
Gay Brian.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah, I really like him. He talked about going to Al-Anon, because he was, like, so ashamed to go back to meetings, like, being so worried about what people thought of him, you know?
He's great.
I think he said he got more out of Al-Anon than AA.
Well, it's because he had an addict mother and an alcoholic father. He's very Al-Anonic. Yeah. That's a good word, Al-Anonic. Yeah, he was a great guest. He was a great, and I knew he would be a great guest. We've had so many great guests. You know, we really have. And, like, I mean, these guys that died. Dave Marshall was a great guest who we erased it. But when he called in and he talked so rawly about what had just happened to him. And he was just, he was a great guest. Jed from Church and Other Drugs is always good to have on. I don't know. I think most of our guests have been fun for the most part, right?
Totally. Yeah.
Except that British guy. Who's that British guy?
Oh, Sam Cutler.
Oh, yeah. That was rough.
Yeah. I wasn't a part of that.
I don't want to talk
about that. That won't be remembered, but yeah. Okay, I mean, that's all the questions I have.
Perfect.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kelly.
I made your listeners a discount code, so if anyone wants to sign up for Work at Health, the program that I work for, they can use the code DOPEY when they check out and get 10% off. So you go to workathealth.com and use the code DOPEY and get 10% off.
Okay, say it one more time.
Okay, if you want to sign up for Work at Health, an online addiction program, you can go to workathealth.com. And use the code DOPEY when you check out, and you'll get 10% off.
Wonderful.
Do you think Work at Health wants to give us some money? Maybe you guys could sponsor us.
Yeah, I can ask. I mean, I'm not, like, the person in charge of that, but we might. Like, I think you guys are so good at, you know, just talking to people and explaining addiction to the people who are trying to get help, you know, and so open-minded about not just being about 12 steps.
We reach a lot of people. It could be really worth your money.
Yeah, I'll pitch it. Kelly, pitch it for you guys.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on. I can't wait to listen to this episode.
Well, it's coming out tomorrow, so get ready.
I'm ready.
All right, cool.
Thanks, Kelly.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that was awesome.
Very nice. Hot Girl Fuck by Life?
Just call her. Let's just run it back.
Huh?
Let's run it back.
Let me run it
Thank
back.
Thank you, Callie. Run it back. Do another. You going to use that lingo in your...
Run it back?
Yeah.
In football, maybe. You run it back.
You never played football.
No, but I know that they run it back.
Hello? There we go.
You're so excited that you say hello before the phone rings.
Hello?
Hello?
Alana. Hey, it's Chris. What's going on?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here with Dave, and we're recording.
Hey, Dave.
What's going on?
I'm, like, sitting in bed and just reading right now.
Alana texted me and said she's very nervous.
She sounds nervous. Don't be nervous. Our show's so stupid, Alana. You have, like, 50,000 people that look at your naked body every day. Don't be nervous about this.
Actually, I was telling someone last night, I was like, you know, I've met a lot of celebrities, I've done all this crazy shit, I had this page in the New York Times, but I was like, these guys are my heroes. Like,
you're the
I'm
best.
I'm really nervous.
listen, this week, right, I was working, and I'm working at my restaurant, and, you know, and this fucking guy, Mike D from the Beastie Boys was there, okay? I could say anything to anybody under any situation, and there's Mike D, and, like, I, like, lost my mind. I, like, was talking stupid, and I was, like, he needed a chair, and I was, like, your name is Mike D and you get respect. And that was like a line from like License to Ill. And like, he was like, oh, that's cool. It was like, I was like nerding out and it, so I can relate.
And he sang that song Intergalactic.
Okay, why don't you do a little Intergalactic for a moment?
Intergalactic.
You're so annoying. But the point is, Alana, we're not Mike D. We don't get any respect. You're way bigger than us. So, come on.
I'm not that cool. I was doing tonight I did a puzzle, and I watched some TV, and I'm reading. So my life's, like, definitely a facade. Like, not what it looks like online.
You have an Instagram facade. You should fucking post pictures of you, like, reading. You, like, doing crossword puzzles.
I know, then the followers will drop, and, you know.
Do you make money on that thing?
Sorry, what did you say?
Do you make money on that thing?
No. People are like, it's so funny. Like, I have a regular job, and people are like, you work? And I was like, fuck yeah, like, I gotta pay my rent. And I'm in school, but because of Instagram, because I'm from, like, a small town in Canada. I live in Toronto, by the way. You guys think you guys had it all twisted. But
you live in Canada now?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto.
I thought you lived here.
Yeah, I didn't know.
No, I lived in New York for probably 2-3 years, and that was like a lot of heavy using. And then basically a big reason I left was because I was like, I'm never getting clean in New York. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Wait, why did I thought it was like Washington or Seattle for some reason?
I don't know, Washington. I was like, what the fuck are they on about?
Wait, hold on. Before you continue, we're total idiots. This is Alana. I won't say your last name. And she has an Instagram, Hot Girl Fuck My Life. We read her email, which was amazing, a few weeks ago. So for all the listeners, that's who we're talking to.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Well, they didn't know. We just called her and started.
When I said Hot Girl Fuck My Life.
Yeah, do you think they immediately knew what that was?
Dude, everybody knows Hot Girl Fuck My Life.
I see a ton of people had messaged me and be like, hey, like, listen to the podcast. Like, it was great. Like, or they hadn't heard and, like, now they listen to it. Like, people inside, outside recovery. So
it's because, like, of you. They want to be you. There's this girl.
No. They want to slide into her DMs. That's what they want to do.
Slide into the DM.
You know what that means?
Yes, I know. do you think I'm that stupid that I don't know what that means?
You're not old.
No, I know what that means. Alana, if you ran our Instagram account, what would you do differently than Chris?
I mean, like, it's just, there needs to be, like, a better, I mean, like, I'm thinking, like, school-wise, like, there needs to be, like, a consistency in imagery, like, a brand identity, and, like, I don't know. I mean, it's funny, I'm making something for you guys right now, but today was my last day of class for the semester, but just, like, when you go on, like, a parent's Facebook, like, your mom's Facebook, that's what it looks like to me. Like, it's just, like, some ancient, like, I don't know, someone really old running it.
I think I do,
like,
a great job.
Like, my mom's Facebook.
Chris is sure that since I'm like 10 years older than him, that he's like cool, like that like, it's like, because he thinks he's like, and he's not, by the way, Alana and the Dopey Nation, Chris is definitely not cooler than me. He says cray cray and texts KK, but that doesn't make you cooler than me, I promise you. But anything
you
want
to... He's that, like, millennial touch, you know?
Yeah. Like, look, listen... Do you remember? I don't know how much of Dopey you've actually listened to, but in the beginning,
missing 10 episodes, but like I've listened to like almost all of them.
There was this guy on the West Coast that calls himself Crazy Otter, and he writes us all the time, and he sends like weird art. He sent us, like, a version of the Dopey logo with Carlos Santana, and it said Peyote instead of Dopey, which I love. But he wrote me last night. he wrote me, he's like, what the fuck? You're begging Hot Girl Fuck by Life to be your art director, and I've obviously sent more art than her. It's like, sorry, Otter, yeah. You know, but,
so, well, I mean, like, it's just, there's not a lot of perks of being a woman in life, but, like, things like that, you know, you get the upper hand.
Totally. So, Alana, I know you said you had a story or two, but could you maybe start by just telling us about the whole shaved head thing? And, you know, you wrote it in the email, but could you expand on it a little bit?
Yeah, so it's so funny. Like, I was, using heavily and I kind of ran away from home it was like my 19th birthday and I ran away and I went to New York from Calgary, which is like out west in Canada. And I didn't tell any of my family. Like, I just took off anyways. And then like I was out in Toronto and then like I hadn't been back basically in like a couple of years. And during that time I was just like in over my head. Finally my parents convinced me to come back even just to visit. And I came back and like on a darker note, like my childhood was like quite dysfunctional. There was just like prevalent abuse in the household. So I think, I had that almost like that. Yeah. Euphoric recall that I was like, oh, I love this. I miss my family, and I just, like, forgot that my family was so fucked up. And then I came home, and, yeah, I have a twin brother, which I don't know if I mentioned.
You did.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, so it was my twin brother, and he's currently still in active addiction. I haven't heard from him in years, and probably since that. And, I still already dressed crazy. I had, like, tattoos and stuff, and, like, yeah, and we just got in this crazy fucking fight because... I don't know, like, he's just an idiot. I didn't want to be back, really, and just, like, I was so spicy, like, back in the day, like, I was a real hothead, and, so anyways, we go at it, and he's like, oh, you think you're cool, because you are in New York, like, you think you're so fucking cool, like, he's like, you know what you are, like, you're a fucking crazy bitch. Like, that sort of thing. And he's like, and you're a crackhead. Like, all this stuff. And I was like, you want to see crazy? I'll show you fucking crazy. And just, of course, like, reach for the scissors and, like, start hacking my hair off. And
oh, my God.
It was, like, my ex-boyfriend was there and one of my brother's friends. And they were all just like, holy fuck, she's out of her goddamn mind. So I started hacking off. Yeah. And then, like, I wanted... So at that point, I hacked off, like, half my hair, but it was... So I went upstairs and I don't even really remember this. Like, this was all like told back to me. And my ex-boyfriend was like, hey, well, your hair is insane. Like, you just have like heel hair now. So he's like, we have to cut it off. But like, we didn't have like clippers. So he's like, I have to bic your head. So he like put shaving cream on my head and completely bicked my head. So like, I have hair now, like, you know, like, there's a, you could tell, it's like a buzz cut.
Yeah, there's like stubble.
I was like shiny, bald.
You're like, Uhura.
Yeah. Yeah, I like, absolutely, out of my fucking mind. And yeah, of course, and my parents, so I came down, in the morning, and this is actually a funny part, I forgot to mention, so my older brother... He's, like, probably the most normal one in our family. Like, the rest of us are all fucked up. But he had this girlfriend, and they're still together. And, like, I mean, she's so sweet. She's such, like, a normal girl. And, like, she had come... She was invited over for brunch, like, to meet me. And, like, I think she, like, brought flowers. She's just such a sweet girl. And my parents are like, come downstairs. Like, Aaron's here. Like, come say hello. And I just, like, stomp downstairs. I'm like... coming down, I'm like still probably drunk and I just have no hair, and like her face, this is the first time she's even met me. And my mom's like, Jesus Christ, Alana, like what the fuck happened? And like my poor brother's girlfriend is like her jaw dropped, and like exist, and I could just tell she was, like, horrified of me.
Alana, were you a model at that point already?
No, this all, like, really happened, like, after I shaved my head, because it was, like, this kind of, like, little trend thing that I guess was kind of relevant for a bit. Just, yeah, but it was all, because, I mean, like, I'm not very tall, and, like, I'm covered in tattoos, and that was kind of just, like, my thing. Like, I mean, I kind of look just like a normal, regular girl if I have hair, but it was, like, that was, like, the selling point of that. I had a shaved head, and now there's, like, you know, models with shaved head. There's, like, a diamond dozen, but, like, I was, like, one of the first girls in the little Instagram world that had done it. But now, yeah.
So
And then for so long I lied about what, like, you know, people thought it was a, like, beautiful decision I made to, like, make a statement against, like, beauty, conforming to, like, a beauty standard. And I was like, fuck, that's just, like, not at all what it was.
You're just a psycho bitch who got drunk and fought her brother and cut her hair.
But 100%. And like I said, I have this full page New York Times article about it.
This is my question, because it's like, if I shaved my head, I mean, obviously I'm not a hot girl who's been fucked by life, but I mean, like, how do you go from Alana the girl to this superhero character that people are interested in? You had an Instagram account, you were a print model, like, what was the thing that turned you into this thing?
I think it was because, like, this is, like, my third Instagram, because I have been, like, reported so many times, and, like, on my original one, like, I was out of control. I would post crazy fucking things. Like, it would be my friends and I out partying, and, like, I was just a menace, and I think it was, like, entertaining for a lot of people, so I kind of just, like, caught on, and then eventually I had, like, accumulated some followers, and there was a man who was, like, doing, like, creative direction for Kanye West, and he was the one that kind of, I don't know how he found me, but he did. And then he was the one that kind of got my foot in the door.
Right.
But basically how it all started, because I would just post, like, outrageous stuff with my friends and I partying, you know.
What was the craziest thing you posted back then?
Sorry?
Like, what was an example of some crazy shit you put on Instagram?
Oh, like, I don't know, like, people doing, you know, lines off of, like, a girl's tits. Like, just, like, it's, like, so stupid to me now, but it was, like, but all these, like, hot girls, and we'd be in a club, and there'd be, like, just a girl, like, naked with, like, drugs all over her, you know, like, we're backstage with, like, some rapper. It's, like, it's just so ridiculous now, and, like, it's so funny, because, like, I come across that stuff sometimes on my, like, just on my feed, and then I'm just like, oh, you sad, sad girl. Like, you need a hug from daddy.
I think I googled you, and I saw a picture of you naked on the toilet, and I was like, all right.
Wait, sorry, say that again? I didn't hear that?
I think when you wrote us the email, I googled you, and I found a picture of you, like, very naked on the toilet. And there was, like, there were no rappers, and there was no drugs, but it was still very provocative.
Yeah, and that was the thing, is, like, I'm very, like, open. I don't find that I'm, like, hypersexual, but I've always been, like, very, just, like, open with nudity, I guess. And so I think that was, like, a big thing. And it would be kind of, even if it was kind of unflattering, it'd be, like, me sitting on the toilet naked. And, like, people are, like, people aren't such fucking squares that just, like, blew their goddamn mind. I don't really understand, but...
What about when you want to jump on somebody like a BMX bike? Wasn't that the other week?
Well, I can tell you, my girlfriend just took a picture of me on the toilet, and I don't think anybody would ever want to see it.
We should do Hot Guy Fuck My Life, and it's just Chris on the toilet.
Maybe I should post a picture after this episode of me on the toilet.
Only if you're naked.
Well, it's so funny because, like, I totally understand how ridiculous it is. It's like, and that's the thing, is, like, I think, like, people get really, like, you know, like, confrontational with me online and DM me stuff, and I was like, this is a huge joke to me. Like, I have a completely normal life, like, that I keep very separate from this, but it's funny. It's so curated. And
that's amazing, yeah, though, because the power, because it's the power of lust. You know, that there are people out there who are, like, so susceptible to this lust, and you're fucking with them. It's like a joke to you, and it's so meaningful to them.
Okay, so I got this lust. You know how I write prisoners, right?
Yeah.
So I got this, there's one guy that I'm particularly close with, and he sent me this letter, and like, I've never met this dude. Like, we've only been writing for a couple months, and he said this to me today. I have a screenshot of it. He says, what I fear is the effect you have on men, you have learned to use as a weapon against the weight of the world upon you, the way you regain control in some limited way, and yet it leaves you further broken and unsatisfied with no sense of truth, true worth. Yeah, which I was like, them. he really called me out. And I was like, I don't even know this guy.
How much time is he doing?
Okay, so this is so incredible. So he was on death row, and he's been in for 25 years, and he committed his crime when he was like 19, and it was a drug related, like, he's in recovery, and he has like 20 years clean, and it was like basically this weird drug thing, and he ended up killing a guy. So, He was put on, he had no prior convictions, but it was, anyways, that's like a whole other thing, but he got, like, he was put on death row, and then, like, 15 years later, they put him onto, like, LWAP, like, life without parole. And then he's in his time that he's been in jail, he's, like, had, he's never been in trouble, he's, like, completed, like, 3 degrees, he's, like, a part of this, like, other program. And then in the last year, like, the senator of California is doing this thing where he's, like, lifting sentences and, like, pardoning, like, sentences. And he's been eligible for it. So he's currently going back and, like, possibly getting out, like, next year. And he was telling me today, because we spoke on the phone, like, the director of, like, the Hangover, Hangover trilogy and, like, Knocked Up, like, apparently he's, like, sponsoring this whole thing, and, like, he's, like, backing him up, and, like, he has, like, an incredible chance of, like, getting out, and he, like,
and he's got, like, your address.
Sorry?
And he's got your address. He's going to come with his bags and say hello.
No, I just feel blocked.
Oh, okay.
Is he in love with you?
Sorry?
Is he in love with you?
I don't know. That's the thing is, like, now he starts being like, I have feelings for you. And I was like, listen, like, it's just because, like, I'm probably the only woman you've talked to in 25 years.
Yeah.
I was like, that's it. Like, but he's, like, very respectful, very articulate, like, has such incredible insight in recovery and life. And, like, I really, truly value, like, the conversations. And, like, I'm so happy to be a part of, like, this thing where he's been calling me, he's like, I'm not going to court today, like, I might be getting out, like, it's really exciting, but he's very respectful, but yeah, he has been like, I have feelings for you, and I'm like, oh, come on.
Well, of course, I mean, even just from what you read, though, he sounds super eloquent, you know?
No, it's incredible, like, yeah. Like, the stuff he sends me, and, like, yeah, it is really cool.
All right, Alana, but, like, so yeah. we have, like, 10 minutes left or so. Do you have maybe, like, a quick story if you want to tell, and then tell us how you got sober? You said a little bit in the email, but if you have a story, if you don't, whatever. I mean, you already told the shaved head thing.
I want to hear about...
I got a good one.
Okay, all right, let's hear it.
Okay, so, I mentioned, like, I left Calgary, I ran away, I only told my brother. I was like, yo, if anyone, like, if it really gets intense, like... And anyone really, you know, just worst comes to worst, like, I'll be in New York. So I left, I went to New York, and I moved in with this guy that I met online. He was, like, I was, like, 19, and he was, like, 30, and he was, like, this Puerto Rican dude. He's, like, yeah, you could stay with me. And it was, like, on Spring Street right off of Bowery and Lower East Side. And then he lived with his brother who had just gotten out of jail, and he was, like, dropping out of the house. And, like, I lived there with them for, like, a while, and he was like, listen, just don't ever say one word to my brother. Like, so I lived with this, like, crazy ex-comic dude. We never exchanged one word. But basically the deal was, like, I could stay at this house on Spring Street as long as I, like, got groceries. And I was like, fuck yeah. Like, and it was pretty sketchy, but it was my ticket out of town, right? And I'm like, yeah. I was like, fucked up conservative family, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna be living in, like, Lower East Side. Like, that blows my mind. So I left, and I already went there, and I had, like, no money, and I was burning through, like, everything I had, and I was like, God, I gotta stay here. But I'm Canadian, so I was like, I couldn't really work, so I was like, started going on Craigslist and stuff, and I found these guys, and they were like, okay, we're having this, like, party, and it's on Wall Street, it's a private event, and the theme was, like, it was, like, a Japanese-themed party, so they're like, we want to do, like, a naked human sushi platter, you know, it's, like, very traditional Japanese, but, like, obviously, it's, like, modernized.
Yeah.
The way they are doing it, so it's, like, so bastardized and just, like, perverted.
Yeah.
But they were like, okay, but it's, like, on Wall Street, and they're like, we'll pay you, like, $300 American, like, an hour. And I was like, okay, fuck, that's pretty easy. Like, so they're like, come to our apartment and meet us. So I get there, and I had, like, a knife in my bag, because I was like, if this gets weird, like, but it was, like, a steak knife. It was, like, just something I found in the kitchen. And I went there. And this apartment was, like, out of fucking control. It was so crazy. I've never been in anything like it. Like, it just, I mean, yeah, it was crazy. So, and they're like, awesome, like, cool, like, you got the job. And I still had long blonde hair, and I had, like, no tattoos. So I was just a very different look. Like, they were, like, perfect. But she's great. And I went there, and, there was, like, a sushi chef, and, like, I laid on this table, and they, like, the sushi chef, like, put all the sushi on me, and then, like, I laid on this table, and he's just, oh, wait, I forgot to add, like, so he's, like, just, you know, like, we're really legit, because I think he could tell I was scared, and he was, like, we are, so what they were, and I looked him up, and, like, this was true, so they were these Russian guys, and they owned a Russian airline company, and they had this, like, crazy penthouse on Wall Street. And so these were the guys that had this Craigslist ad, and I found it. Anyway, so I did this thing, I laid on the table, it was weird, whatever, these, like, gross Russian dudes, like, ate sushi off of me, and it was just, like, terribly uncomfortable, but I was like, I'm trying to stay in New York, like, girls gotta eat. And so I finished after a few hours, maybe 2 hours, and it's just such easy money. I'm getting up, and I like my, like, jeans, and they're all wearing like suits and dresses, and I put on my my Chuck Taylors and like my ripped jeans and like a tank top, and I'm just about to head out, and they're like, well, why don't you stay, like, do you want a drink? And I was like, yeah, for sure. And, like, in no time, all these guys are, like, swarmed around me. And they're, like, feeding me drinks. And they're, like, do you want anything else? And I'm, like, obviously so manipulative. I was, like, yeah, I want drugs. Like, and they're, like, okay, we'll get you whatever you want. And I was, like, cool. Like, I want blow. Like, give me blow. And they're feeding me all this stuff. And then they take me to this room. And they're, like, here, have some of this. And I had it. And then I was, like, well, what is this? Tasted kind of, like, different. And they're, like, oh, it's ketamine, and I did so much, and I was like, oh, shit, like,
oh, my God,
and I could just feel, I just did this, like, Hollywood light of, like, ketamine, I was like, oh, God, and I was like, okay, maybe it'll be fine, and I could just slowly feel myself, like, losing it, and I was like, okay, I gotta go, and I'm like, these dudes are gonna fuck me or something, like, I don't know, I gotta get out of here. And they were, like, trying to, you know, block the door, and I was like, yeah, get out of here, I gotta get out of here. And so eventually I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to use the washroom. And they left. Anyways, I ran out of the apartment, and I didn't have my shoes on or my bag, but I had the cash, like, in my pocket. And I left, and I went into the street, and I had, like, no shoes, and I knew where I lived, and I was like, like, I feel myself fading. And I remember I sat down on the sidewalk, and that was it. I can't remember anything else. I guess I, like, KO'd or whatever. And I woke, I guess what happened was some dude, and he was some photographer guy, had found me, and I guess he figured out where I lived, and he took me home, and, like, I think during that time, too, I, like, peed my pants and, like, barfed on him or something. And he laid me out front of my door, and, my, and like, the crazy ex-convict dude who was, like, selling drugs out of the apartment, like, he was letting someone in to buy drugs, and there was, like, yo, this girl's outside your door, and she's just, like, she's passed out. So they, like, drag me into the apartment, and then they find that I have, like, $2,000 in my pocket in cash, like, no shoes, no purse, like...
Oh my god!
And they're like, what? Yeah, they're like, what the fuck did you do? And I didn't want to tell them. Like, I didn't want to tell them that, like, what I did. So I was like, I never did. I was like, I don't know. I just went, like, I don't know where this money came from.
Oh my god!
It's like the exact opposite of every other person's story in the world. They go out with money. They turn up like. Destitute and broke. You go out with nothing. You turn up with no shoes. It's
lucky,
and money.
But it's lucky you made it outside to the street. No, you know what I mean?
Oh my god, it was so crazy. I mean, the worst part of that story was like I pissed my pants. Like, whatever.
Oh, Alana, I wanted you to really take out that knife out of your bag and be like, "Listen, motherfuckers, I'm getting out of here now."
Oh my god.
I know. I just fuck. I mean, it's so horrifying too. And like, I'm a bit older now. Like, I mean, like, I'm like turning 24. Like, I'm not old, but like I was like 18 when that happened. I was like, what? Like, what a sad, stupid little girl that I like would be like, okay, like I want money for drugs, but like, eat sushi off my body and feed me drugs. Like, it's just like pathetic.
It's crazy.
It's sad. I mean, I mourn for that girl. It's quite.
Well, you're lucky. You're very lucky.
It's a great story, though.
Yeah.
It's a classic New York story.
I thought it was like a good classic dopey, like, and yeah. But man, I used to love ketamine. I mean, you guys know it used to be fun, but it until it gets not fun.
Alana, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say like how I got clean. I mean, like any of us, it just doesn't get fun after a while. And I don't, I think it obviously started off like partying. And then, you know, then I kind of realized that somebody had said to me, they're like, oh, you're self-medicating. And I was like, oh, fuck. I've never heard that term before. And I was always the one to just take it a little bit too far, you know, and then like, so eventually I was like mostly just using alone. I was really into donors, so just like I was really into Oxy, you know, Valium, Ativan, Xanax, cough syrup, like anything. So it just became to the point where I was just so sick, like, and I just kind of mentioned that I was trying to get clean for a while, but just on my own terms, and obviously that just doesn't really work, like, for me anyways, like, I need to work a program and be of service, but it wasn't until, like, I came across somebody else who was in the program, and like I said, he was just a guy that I met on a set, and he's a quite well-known, like, creative director in New York, and he was in the program, and I think obviously, like, he picked up on it, and he was like, let me help you, and do you guys know Maddie Matheson, like the celebrity chef?
Maddie Matheson, no.
He has a show on Vice. It's like Dead Set on like Supper Time.
Okay, no, and I only know like Gordon Ramsay.
He's this like celebrity chef dude, and he's from Toronto, and he's in recovery, and he's like quite openly in recovery. He's like a Toronto recovery hero, so I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying it, but. Anyways, my friend had gotten a hold of him, and I didn't know his Maddie before at all, and him and Maddie had called me after, you know, like a week after the set or whatever, and they had set up we'll be at this meeting, and there'll be some other women in the program, like, all you have to do is show up, and, like, you could live the rest of your life, like, you don't have to live like this anymore. And I remember I showed up to the meeting, yeah, and they were just like, welcome home, like, and I was like, oh my god, like, And it was just like this like very serendipitous, like total moment of clarity where I was like, fuck, I'm done. Like, I'm done. And I, so far, like, relapse hasn't been a part of my story, like almost 2 years in, but like, yeah, I kind of, it was just a very like, yeah, just a
you found
very
home.
Moment
you
of
found,
clarity. I mean, you can't really articulate it. You just know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all and 10 being it really saved your life, how much would you say dopey impacted your recovery?
Like, honestly, like so much. Like, I don't care, 1 to 10, like I would honestly say, like, an 8. Like, because I told you guys, like, I was in, like, I had, like, a terrible fucking summer because this crazy-ass dude from my program, that's a whole other dopey story. He robbed me this summer, and it was, like, it was terrifying.
He did what?
And I, sorry?
No, keep going.
Yeah, he basically, this guy in my program who, I was close with him and his wife, he went back out, and him and I up until then had a completely appropriate relationship, and he would pick me up from pick me up and drive me to meetings, and they would try the holidays with them. And anyways, he went back out, but he knew where I lived and he knew where I worked, and he just showed up, and it was a day after my 1 year, and he's like, I want you to stop by and wish you a happy 1 year clean, and like, boom, just like, he robbed me. And anyways, I got everything back because I went so crazy, and like, anyways, let's just say I got it back and a window got smashed. But after that, I was quite afraid to see him. And I also wanted him to have access to meetings, like, primarily, because I was like, this dude needs some fucking help. And I turned inwards, and it was, like, it was pretty difficult for me. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I'd, like, need my recovery. So I turned to a podcast. But, you know, like, I listened to Cher and then, like, some other ones. But they're just so, like, I don't know. Like, you know, they're just so dull. And, like, that's a big reason I like meetings, is because there's, like, a voyeuristic aspect of it.
Right.
That I'm, like, I love hearing these crazy fucking stories. I like seeing people, like, sitting in their chairs tweaking. Like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, that's a big part of it for me, is, like, the personalities you meet, like, the, you know, and that was, and then I found you guys, and it was just, like, I was, like, holy shit. I was, like, I can't believe I didn't find you guys either. And I just, like, binge listened. And I remember, so my roommate and my best friend, he was like, I was listening to you guys on my Bluetooth speaker, and finally, after like 2 weeks of like binge listening, he came upstairs and he's like, and he's very supportive of my recovery. He's like, I swear to fucking God, if you play 1 hour of those podcasts, I'm gonna lose my fucking mind. So he's like, I don't wanna hear those guys anymore. Like, they're driving me nuts. So after that, I was just listening with headphones on.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
I love
and he's
that.
Like, yeah, he's not very entertaining.
Yeah, I have a feeling a lot of people have that reaction to us. But we love that you are such an ardent member of the Dopey Nation. We love that. I love it when you play us talking about you and you lick your lips. I think that was fucking awesome.
I thought you guys would, I knew you guys would like that.
That was great. But we gotta go. We're fucking an hour and a half in. But listen.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's set up another one, and you
another
can tell
story.
Us some particularly horrible dopiness. And
oh my god, I still have some good. Like, I wanted to go easy in on this one, but I have a whole list.
We'll do
like,
it in a few weeks.
Yeah, I'll have you back on in a month or so.
But we love having you on, and we love having you a part of everything. It's awesome. We love it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, like this is so great. And I'm so happy we're in touch now.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so have a beautiful Christmas.
And Alana, write that guy. I'm going to write him, too.
I have to write him, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will, 100%.
Okay. All
Merry
right,
Christmas.
All
right. Happy New Year.
Yes. Stay strong, Domination, and toodles.
You don't have to say toodles.
Toodles.
You don't have to make him happy. You don't have to say that shit.
All right. Thank you, Alana.
All right.
Bye.
Later. Bye.
Fuck, I forgot about Christmas stories.
I know, we gotta do Christmas stories, and he's outside the door right now.
Nah, we're fucked.
I wrapped this thing up.
All right, stay strong, Dopey
Nation. Stay strong, Dopey Nation. Drop us a review, like us on Reddit and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and emails.
Even though you
and,
shit on Twitter,
yeah.
It's like the Twitter thing is growing, and I need you to tell them I need you guys to get on Twitter. I need you guys to follow us on Twitter. Like 10 of you right now, follow us on Twitter.
Wait, please. Hold on. Hold on.
What are you doing?
Come here. Hurry up.
Stop it.
Tell her. What did you do?
I've been waiting there
just
for
say,
like,
say hi, Annie.
Minutes.
Annie's going to be on the next episode.
Hello.
This is my
hi,
lovely
Annie.
Girlfriend, Annie.
How
say
is
hi.
Everybody.
We're
hello.
Recording.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay, hello.
What do you have to say? How was your night?
It was really nice. I had dinner at an Italian restaurant called Little Frankie's.
Yeah.
Really great food. Got to see and hang out with some of my girlfriends.
All right, that's enough.
And
we're going to have you on the next episode.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Say toodles.
Toodles.
I want to take a walk around the world. I wonder would it do me any good? Until I get some money in my pocket, then I guess I'll just have to walk around my neighborhood. But I want to be good so bad. Want to be so good, so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And I want to take a ride up in the sky. Watch as airplanes just pass me by. And I want to see a Lear jetliner take a dive. Just to show all of these people what it means to be alive. But I want to be good so bad. Want to be so good, so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And my shadow's getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. Shadow's getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. And I wonder would they pay it any mind when I leave this busted city far behind. I'll take the high road, however far it winds. Because peace and love are very, very, very hard to find. And I want to be good so bad. Want to be good so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. Damn it, all these suckers make me mad. And it's all I ever had. And it's all I ever had. These suckers make me mad, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had. And these suckers make me mad, and it's all I ever had, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had.